Hello there. Today is Friday, March the 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a tough week for President Trump, both overseas and here in the U.S.
Half a world away in Washington, another drama was playing out in a congressional hearing room, possibly ominous consequences for the president.
Prosecutors in Israel say Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will be indicted on corruption charges. Polar bear habitat in peril, what scientists are saying. Also ahead, Lady Gaga says she and Bradley Cooper are not in love.
I'm an artist, and I guess we did a good job, and full job. Yeah.
It's all on today's International Edition. A second summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un collapsed Thursday over sanctions, and the two sides gave conflicting accounts of exactly what happened, raising questions about the future of their denuclearization talks. Trump said 2 days of talks in the Vietnamese capital of Hanoi had made good progress in building relations and on the main issue of denuclearization, but it was important not to rush into a bad deal. He said he'd walked away because of unacceptable North Korean demands. Trump says North Korea wanted sanctions lifted in their entirety, while North Korea says it had sought only partial lifting.
He has a certain vision, and it's not exactly our vision, but it's a lot closer than it was a year ago. And I think, you know, eventually we'll get there. But for this particular visit, we decided that we had to walk.
I talked about it earlier with Sun Yoon Lee, a scholar of Korean and East Asian studies and specialist on North Korea. He at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. And I asked, who does he believe?
North Korea does tend to lie straight in your face. Strategic deception is a very highly cultivated form of art in North Korea. Smoke screens and fake peace overtures before launching an invasion, for example, in 1950. So we can't really take what they say at face value. But right now, I'm sure they're smarting from being snubbed by President Trump. I mean, it's embarrassing. This was high-profile political theater. And now, although Kim Jong-un on his itinerary was to linger to stay in Vietnam after Trump's departure, now he feels a bit, I guess, abandoned even. But they will regroup. They will recover. Kim Jong-un, in his last 2 days on his visit to Vietnam, will exude that famous smile. He will interact cordially with his gracious Vietnamese host. He will visit high-tech companies, thus coming across as a reform-minded leader. And then, at the right time, Kim will dangle another sweet carrot before the United States and try to ensnare the United States in drawn-out negotiations, during which time North Korea is able to buy more time and more money in the form of lax sanctions enforcement against the regime with which to further build and perfect the bomb.
This situation, doesn't it sort of exemplify why past American presidents have not been willing to just go and meet with North Korea's leader without any sort of tentative agreement or substantial?
Well, it's not done in that manner in any kind of international politics. You know, summit meetings, unlike a blind date, you just cannot have any kind of uncertainty or spontaneity. Everything needs to be agreed upon beforehand, and the meeting itself, the handshake itself, is just a symbolic confirmation, a bonhomous moment where you smile and shake hands and toast each other and reaffirm the terms agreed upon already. But, of course, Trump did it the other way and learned the hard way that it's not so easy to tame the funny-looking North Korean dictator. Americans have long patronized, underestimated their North Korean adversary and have paid the price continually. Oftentimes, Americans who meet Kim the first, the second, or this one the third come away dazzled that the North Korean tyrant, formerly crazy-looking and bizarre, is actually quite reasonable, has a sense of humor, very intelligent, and North Korea as a backward country has been very successful, the regime that is, in building the bomb, building ICBMs, in being able to dictate to the big powers in the region the terms of engagement and negotiation, so one should not patronize North Korea and take it seriously.
A whole nother controversy was sparked by comments by President Trump in his address to the media about this summit ending, being cut short, when he was asked about Otto Warmbier and if he brought it up to Kim. And he basically took the side of Kim Jong-un, saying that Kim told him he felt badly about it and that he didn't know about Warmbier until much later on. And he said he would take his word for it, that he doesn't believe that he would have allowed it to happen. That is not being received well.
No, and it shouldn't be, because one reason is because the parents of Otto sued the DPRK and they won. There was a trial in a federal court in Washington on December 19th. I participated as an expert witness, so I know something about the case. And the judge ruled on December 24th that the DPRK, the government, is guilty of hostage-taking, torture, and extrajudicial killing. And to presume that the top leader in a country like North Korea, holding hostage an American college student in early January 2016, just days before North Korea conducted a nuclear test, to say that the top leader would not have considered an American hostage to be of utility as North Korea was preparing for these provocative acts in a country like North Korea is ludicrous.
All right, that's Sun Yoon Lee, a scholar of Korean and East Asian studies on North Korea. He is a specialist on North Korea at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. Meanwhile, at the same time, as VOA national correspondent Jim Malone tells us, it wasn't the only problem for the president this week.
Half a world away in Washington, another drama was playing out in a congressional hearing room with possibly ominous consequences for the president.
My name is Michael Dean Cohen.
The president's former personal attorney and fixer unleashed on his former boss before Congress and a national television audience. Cohen accused the president of criminal wrongdoing and painted a devastating personal portrait of the president.
Because I know what Mr. Trump is. He is a racist. He is a con man. And he is a cheat.
Trump has denied Cohen's allegations, and Republicans slammed Cohen as an admitted liar and accused Democrats of using his testimony to set the stage for impeachment. Republican Congressman Clay Higgins.
This is an attempt to injure our president and lay some sort of soft cornerstone for future impeachment proceedings.
But the political and legal damage wrought by Cohen's testimony could be substantial, says legal analyst Randy Zellin.
Michael Cohen is not a good witness, not a great witness. He is the ultimate witness because he was there.
The president saw the hearing as a major distraction from his foreign policy efforts.
But I think having a fake hearing like that and having it in the middle of this very important summit is really a terrible thing.
Beset by weak polls and investigations at home, Trump was hoping for success with North Korea to boost him politically, says David Kim.
Because he wants to win. This is the only diplomatic achievement that he can claim right now. We're pulling out of Syria, we're pulling out of Afghanistan, we have bad relations with our friends in NATO.
The lack of progress on North Korea, combined with the allegations leveled by Cohen, come at a time when the president is preparing for what will be a difficult re-election battle, says John Fortier.
Look, he's still at 43-44% of the public thinking he's doing a good job. That's not a terrible number, but it's probably not a high enough number that he would want to go into the election.
For the president, more challenges lie ahead in the near future, including the long-awaited report summarizing the Russia investigation led by special counsel Robert Mueller. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And Cohen was back on Capitol Hill Thursday, where lawmakers say he was fully cooperative during closed-door testimony before a congressional committee investigating Russia's interference into the 2016 U.S. election. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff said Cohen will return for further questioning on March 6th.
I think we all feel it was a very productive interview today, where he was able to shed light on a lot of issues that are very core to our investigation, and we were able to drill down in great detail.
Schiff also said the testimony will eventually be made public. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Venezuela cracks down on journalists. Two suicide bombs claim at least 15 in Mogadishu. Yazidi children in Syria await family reunions. And on World Polar Bear Day, climatologists sound the alarm. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Israel's Attorney General has recommended that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu be indicted in three separate corruption cases, and the Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
After 2 years of investigations, Israel's Attorney General recommended that the Prime Minister be charged with bribery in one case and breach of trust in two others, subject to a hearing. Netanyahu hit back hard at the Attorney General and what he called the leftist media, accusing them of trying to make sure he loses the upcoming election. He said that he is 4,000% sure that all of the accusations against him will be proved false and that he will continue to be prime minister for many years to come. Earlier, before his announcement, Netanyahu got a boost from President Donald Trump.
I can say this, that he's done a great job as prime minister. He's tough, he's smart, he's strong. He is very defensive. His military has been built up a lot.
The Attorney General's recommendation for indictment comes 39 days before Israel's election and could swing support away from Netanyahu and his Likud party. A new centrist party, including three former army chiefs of staff, is gaining ground. Netanyahu insists that he will not step down unless he is convicted. Even a final decision on indicting him after the hearing could take months. At the same time, the Attorney General said he was dropping charges against Netanyahu's wife, Sara, in a separate investigation. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
A new survey conducted by Nigeria's Bureau of Statistics and UNICEF shows millions of households in Nigeria do not have access to clean water sources. While the supply of clean water in Nigeria has improved recently, 3 in 10 people still lack access. Timothy Obizu reports from Abuja.
Every day, it's a struggle for water for Ruth Samuel and her family. Sometimes they have to wait hours to scoop water from the spring.
Like in the dry season, we used to wake up sometimes 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Before you get there, man, you cannot see water. You wait.
Aid agencies say 60 million Nigerians, or 33% of the population, do not have access to clean water. But experts say the figure could be higher.
I think that figure is a little bit conservative in the sense that as Nigerians, we know that more of our population live in the rural areas. And I think the World Bank statistics tells us that about 51% of our population reside in the rural areas. And it is common knowledge that the rural population don't have access to clean water.
Like many other states in Nigeria's northern region, the federal district of Abuja lies on the fringes of the Sahel Desert, which means in the dry season when water level is low, sources like this could dry up, leaving thousands here who rely on it daily in dire need.
Major problem is funding. Yes. And with improved funding, there will be improved infrastructural development, which will guarantee adequate provision of water for the population.
But Joseph Ibrahim says there could be a way out.
I think it's high time we start recycling our water and through channeling our water to waste treatment plants. And from there we separate water as is done in other developed countries of the world.
The government launched an emergency action plan in November to address water problems, but it has yet to make much impact. Until the rains return, Ruth Samuel and many others here will have to rely primarily on a water source that is drying out. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
Wednesday marked World Polar Bear Day, an annual opportunity for conservationists to shed light on the status of the largest and most carnivorous member of the bear family. As VOA's Kevin Enix reports, climate change is threatening polar bear habitat and the very future of the species in the wild.
Some 30 polar bears live in German zoos, and there are less than 100 in zoos in the U.S. But most polar bears are in the wild.
It is estimated that about 25,000 polar bears are still living in their natural habitat. We know that this is not much, and by now the threats are also increasing. It is not only the ubiquitous climate change, which of course could lead to the vanishing of the basis of life for polar bears, the ice.
And Arctic sea ice is declining, by some reports about 10% a decade. Without that ice, bears can't hunt the seals that make up most of their diet.
They have to capture at least one seal every 5 to 10 days. That's just to break even. And if they don't do that, they're going to lose weight. And if they lose weight, then there are other things that come in play with their health, their ability to reproduce, and so forth.
And that is increasingly leading some polar bears to look for food where people live. It got so bad in the Russian region of Nova Zemlya in February that authorities declared a state of emergency to deal with the bears.
The reason for concentration on Nova Zemlya is obviously their garbage place. It looks like they put a huge portion of something edible. Some people talk about fish or something like that, and it attract the polar bear.
And while polar bear numbers are increasing in some places, in other places they're down by about 40%. Climatologists predict the Arctic will have ice-free summers beginning in 2050. If that happens, environmentalists believe polar bears won't be able to survive in the wild.
It was a normal when in some areas there wasn't any ice for couple of weeks, for months maybe, but now it's several months.
The concern is that by the end of the century, the only way to see polar bears will be in a zoo. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
The 2019 VOA calendars are in. This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture U.S. byways, including beautiful photos of the Big Sur Coast Highway and even the historic Route 66. Tune in to Border Crossings at 1500 Universal to request a free calendar.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, the first female-led superhero film from Marvel Studios, Captain Marvel, stars Brie Larson as a former U.S. Air Force fighter pilot whose DNA was fused with an alien race, giving her superhuman strength and abilities. As VOA's David Byrd reports, the film carries a strong message of female empowerment.
Your life began the day it nearly ended. We found you. With no memory, we made you one of us. So you could live longer, stronger, superior. You were reborn.
Brie Larson stars as Captain Carol Danvers, a U.S. Air Force fighter pilot whose DNA is fused with an alien race of superheroes known as the Kree. The Kree are at war with the Skrulls, a race of extraterrestrial shapeshifters who invade Earth in the 1990s. To prepare for her role, Larson learned judo, boxing, and wrestling. She also visited Nellis Air Force Base and met with Jeannie Leavitt, the first female U.S. Air Force fighter pilot and the first woman to command a combat fighter wing. Brie Larson said at the London premiere that even with all her training, nothing prepared her for working in the Marvel film.
It was all new to me in terms of dealing with visual effects and stunts, but it was like the challenge that I was so excited about stepping into this new way of storytelling. And there were so many things that were specifically new to me, like doing a ropes course sequence 50 feet up in the air, or learning complicated wire kicks, even learning how to fly. Those are things that required a lot of rehearsal time.
Samuel L. Jackson, a regular in Marvel's Avengers films, stars as super spy Nick Fury before the injury that brings his trademark eye patch. Jackson says that Larson is the perfect person to be the center of Marvel Studios' first female-led storyline.
The effect of what the character does and how she's perceived is going to be a really kind of wonderful boost for the female empowerment movement. Because Brie is that person. She has that voice, she has that platform, and she uses it very well.
Writer-director Ryan Fleck says that Larson performed beyond his wildest dreams in this role.
Well, she was cast before we came on, so that was easy. That was the easy part for us, and in fact, that was one of the reasons we wanted to do the movie, is because she's so wonderful, and we thought, man, what can she do with this role? It's limitless. So she's wonderful. I mean, the people who see the movie will see for themselves just how spectacular she really is.
British actress Lashana Lynch plays Maria Rambo, one of Carol Danvers' oldest friends and also a U.S. Air Force fighter pilot. She says that the film sends a strong message to young girls.
And I think it's nice to just show women just standing their ground, using their voices, using their intelligence, and using the fact that they're fighter pilots, which is never represented really in cinema, especially for us women.
Captain Marvel also stars Annette Bening as the Supreme Intelligence, the ruler of the Kree Empire. Jude Law stars as Yon Rogg, Carol Danvers' mentor and a commander of the Kree Star Force. Ben Mendelsohn plays Talos, the leader of the Skrulls. Captain Marvel is rated PG-13 for sequences of sci-fi violence and action and some brief suggested language. It opens in wide release in the United States March 8th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Well, it was acting, not love, when Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper sang a duet Sunday at the 91st Academy Awards. Gaga discussed the emotional performance of Shallow from their film A Star Is Born during an appearance Wednesday on ABC's Jimmy Kimmel Live. The duet was so intense that it blew up the internet, with people posting that they are definitely in love. The artist rolled her eyes and called social media the toilet of the internet, saying it has hurt pop culture.
People saw love, and guess what? That's what we wanted you to see.
Yes.
You know, I mean, this is a love song, Shallow. The movie, A Star Is Born, it's a love story.
Well, Gaga says they'd worked all week on that performance.
When we started, and he starts singing Tell Me Something Girl, the whole audience started cheering, and I was like, yes, Bradley, like, yes, they love it, keep going, we've got this, you know, it was great.
And for those who can't get enough of their Oscar night performance, Warner Brothers is bringing a special encore version of A Star Is Born back to the big screen on Friday with nearly 12 additional minutes of footage. The studio said Wednesday that the new edition will feature extended performances of songs sung by Gaga and an a cappella of Shallow, which won the Oscar Sunday for Best Original Song. It will also feature brand new scenes between the two leads. The one-week engagement starts Friday on over 1,100 screens in the U.S. and Canada. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you very much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great, great day. In the shallow, we're far from the shallow now. Oh, 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 shallow now.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA News.